This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca, iTunes, and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Under Canadian law, a person living with HIV may be guilty of a crime for not disclosing his or her HIV-positive status before engaging in certain activities. Charges have been laid against people living with HIV in numerous cases, particularly cases involving sexual contact. But a group called the Global Commission on HIV and the Law has taken the position that non-disclosure of HIV status, as well as sex work and possession of drugs for personal use, should all be decriminalized. The Toronto Star reports that more than 130 out of more than 65,000 people living with HIV in Canada have been charged for not disclosing their status. This number is second only to the U.S., which has more than 1.2 million people living with HIV. If convicted, an HIV-positive person can face a lifetime in prison and be registered as a sexual offender. A Supreme Court of Canada decision on a related case is expected very soon. We're joined on the phone by Heidi Exner, Manager of Health Promotion and Community Development at AIDS Vancouver Island.
Welcome back to People First Radio, Heidi.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Heidi, doesn't it seem logical, at least to the average citizen, that someone who does not disclose the fact that they're HIV positive and then goes on to possibly or actually infect their partner with HIV should be considered guilty of an offense?
Well, I think it's important to remember that one of the most important responsibilities of the legal system, in fact, is that the law is supposed to uphold and protect the human rights of every citizen. So in this case, there's a lot of loopholes in the law that are being used to discriminate against HIV-positive citizens in this country. So when we look at what's happening around this issue today, we see that it's not about whether someone with HIV actually infects someone else. It's actually about simply whether or not they actually told that other person about their HIV status. So in fact, the cases being brought forward right now show that a person doesn't have to have infected someone else to be charged. People are being charged even in cases where no HIV transmission has occurred or where there was actually very little scientific evidence that HIV could even be transmitted. So I don't think it's actually about anyone saying that the law shouldn't be applied in rare cases of malicious intent. And you know, that's where someone's motive was actually to infect someone else. These cases are really rare, in fact, and are the vast majority of the cases being brought forward. The thing about HIV is that there's no other health condition quite like it. There's so much heavy stigmatization, and it attracts a lot of legal and social reaction. So the law can be taken advantage of to further stigmatize people. And this is a healthcare and human rights issue. So whether you're HIV positive or negative in Canada today means that you must fear the law as something that may be used to discriminate against you rather than see it as a place that will be fair and just for every citizen. So we think this is an abuse of the law and a miscarriage of justice.
The Canadian HIV/AIDS Legal Network, which is a national organization in Canada, notes that there is growing public debate, including in the media, on the criminalization of HIV exposure and its impacts. But they also observe that it's difficult to say that much of the media commentary, with a few exceptions, is well-informed or attempts honestly to present a careful, and I think the key word might be nuanced, assessment of the public policy considerations at stake, both pro and con. And I think you were speaking in this direction just a moment ago. What are those public policy considerations, pro and con?
Well, I think I'm really glad you brought up the issue of the media, because there's an old saying in the media that if it bleeds, it leads. So this is a bias in reporting that tends to also deeply affect public and community perception and public policy and awareness of almost every issue we see in the media today. So because most people look to the news as a source of education on what's happening in the world, and they also depend on it to be a present to present a fair and well-rounded portrayal of what's happening, that's not happening with HIV and hasn't happened for a long time. This is very critical when it comes to this issue, especially in the legal context. So if the media is sensationalizing the most extreme stories and still portraying HIV in antiquated ways and still treating it like an automatic death sentence or taboo in nature, the community will likely follow suit. So as a result, the public will respond with fear and stigma if that's the issue and how it's being painted in the media. So discrimination is the result of that. Worse than that, silence in a community is a sign that the fear is so great, it's better to not even talk about it, lest we be marked as as connected to the issue in some way. And this is dangerous. It serves to ostracize us from our community. We see evidence in this in how people are still afraid to talk about and use condoms in their sex life. We see it in fear to even go for HIV testing, fear to access treatment when you have it because you might be outed or identified as having it. Fear to disclose, and this has a direct relationship to what's happening when we talk about disclosure today. So public policy and political decision-making get informed by public opinion, and also that in itself is related to what the media says about this issue. So I would venture to say that how HIV is reported in the media really affects our perceptions, and all the social and political implications that follow are very serious. So this isn't just an issue for HIV-positive Canadians. Every Canadian should be deeply concerned about this.
People First Radio is a program about people, the society in which we live, and the issues related to health and wellness. Coming to you on CHOY 101.7 FM and streaming at CHOY.ca.
In many countries, including Canada, it is a criminal offense to transmit or expose another person to HIV through unprotected sex. Legislators and courts have decided that the criminal law requires people living with HIV to disclose their HIV status before engaging in behaviors that risk transmitting HIV. As a consequence, some people living with HIV have been convicted of serious criminal offenses, such as aggravated sexual assault or grievous bodily harm, and have been sentenced to significant time in prison for failing to disclose their HIV status. But there is no good evidence that the criminal law is effective at preventing HIV transmission. Criminalization of HIV may drive people away from public health initiatives that have proven effective, such as HIV testing, counseling, and support and partner notification. The public attention given to criminal prosecutions may create a false sense of security that the law will protect people from HIV infection. It may also undermine the message that every person is responsible for his or her own sexual health, and led to human rights abuses by increasing the stigma and discrimination faced by people living with HIV. We're speaking with Heidi Exner, Manager of Health Promotion and Community Development at AIDS Vancouver Island.
Heidi, in the late 1980s, the early 1990s, a handful of cases were brought before the courts in which people living with HIV were charged with a range of criminal offenses for either transmitting HIV or engaging in conduct that carried or was perceived to carry a risk of transmitting HIV. But in one of those cases, the Supreme Court of Canada ruled that a person living with HIV could be found guilty of aggravated assault if he or she did not disclose his or her HIV positive status and exposed another person to a significant risk of transmission. Now, that's the Courier case. Tell us more about that case.
Well, it was the first of its kind in Canada, and it really set precedent for how we look at this in the legal system. It was established as a legal test of significant risk of bodily harm. So the language used in the court case and the ruling that came down from that case was that a person with HIV could be held legally responsible and accountable if they did not disclose and the activity that they were engaging in held a significant risk of bodily harm. So the issue with that is that the law didn't go on to define what that is very clearly, and it hasn't kept up with the science on this issue. We've learned a lot since 1998, which is when this ruling came down, on what HIV is, how it affects the body, how easy or difficult it is to transmit depending on what kind of activity you're doing, how medications affect it, whether condoms are effective, what kind of sexually. We've learned a ton about this, and the law hasn't kept up. So as a result, those loopholes are what is allowing people to kind of use the law to discriminate against people who are HIV positive. So I think the law needs to define what is significant bodily harm and risk of bodily harm in this day and age when we have way more information about the issue.
The Supreme Court of Canada is expected to rule imminently, as in any day now, on two landmark cases on this issue. Do you know more about those cases, Heidi? Can you share some information with us?
Yeah, there's two court cases before the Supreme Court at the moment, one in Manitoba and the other in Quebec, and both cases speak to the issue of viral load and condom use as updated scientific information on what we know about HIV and risk of transmission. So when we use condoms, we know that they're really effective in helping prevent HIV transmission during sex. So the issue at hand with one of those cases is, well, if you use a condom and say the person's viral load is really low, which we also know happens when people are on medication for HIV, their viral load is so low that it makes them, it's really hard for them to infect someone else. So because those two things were never really clarified under the law, these court cases are bringing them up now. So again, it's about redefining and clarifying and preventing those loopholes in the law around what is significant risk of bodily harm. This is very critical.
Now, in the last few minutes here, I'd like to turn back briefly to the question of policy. The Canadian HIV/AIDS Legal Network also states that the best available evidence, prevention of HIV transmission, and respect for human rights must be the foundations of policy. They call for a graduated response to the situation of people who do not disclose their HIV status, with public health law and interventions as the starting point rather than criminal law. And I think that you're speaking in this direction when you talk about the nuances to this whole series of challenges. What are your thoughts on this graduated response? What does it actually mean in practice?
Well, what it means is that we know so much more about HIV now, and that there's so many ways you can't get HIV, right? So unfortunately, the loopholes in the law are allowing people to bring cases forward where there's actually either no or very little risk of infection. And therefore, a person with HIV should not really be expected to have to disclose their status, you know, every single time. There may be a slight risk, because that outs them in the community. It creates all kinds of complications under the law and in society because of all the stigma out there and the impact of stigma on them. So I think in policy and practice, what this means is looking at the facts, the science, and letting the law speak to what does the science say about this, and what can we expect to be reasonable in terms of an expectation when we're talking about someone who's HIV positive living their life. We can't expect that everyone out there, and certainly everyone out there, is not out to infect someone else. In fact, what we know is that people with HIV are the most concerned about preventing transmission to other people. In our work here, we see a number of individuals come forward and talk about how stressful it is to make sure that they're not at risk to someone else. There's a real sense of being a walking biohazard, and that's directly related to how this is viewed socially. So in practice, what we're really talking about is clarification under the law, so that it can't be used against people, and also following public health policy, that this is not necessarily a legal issue. This is a public health issue. And we need to be continuing our efforts in education and continuing our efforts in creating awareness around this issue so it's not stigmatized, because education is really key. The more we know, the less this thing can scare us into behaving in ways that are inhumane and do not follow human rights.
Heidi Exner, thank you very much for taking the time to join us. It was nice to speak with you again.
Thank you very much.
Heidi Exner is Manager of Health Promotion and Community Development at AIDS Vancouver Island. You can find AIDS Vancouver Island online at avi.org. You can find out more about the legal aspects of HIV disclosure online at aidslaw.ca. We also want to acknowledge our extensive use of content from the Canadian HIV/AIDS Legal Network in the preparation for this interview.
And a reminder to our Mid-Island listeners, AIDS Vancouver Island will hold its annual AIDS Walk in Nanaimo on Saturday, September 22nd. It'll be held at Maffeo Sutton Park in the downtown area. Registration begins at 11 a.m. and the walk starts at noon. Visit avi.org for more information.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.